Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the Monday morning side of things.
That's exactly how Mondays are for most people.
Yes.
Very, very good. Very, very good. So.
And beans.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm beans.
How's your weekend? Good?
It was really good. Yeah, it was, you know, I tried to take Saturday. I just kind of vegged out and did nothing. And then yesterday was a little more hectic. Did you happen to catch, I know I sent it to you. It's a little lengthy. Did you read the article that we threw up on Uncover DC last night?
Is it the Finch article?
It's the Finch article.
I have not. I saw you sent me the link late last night, so I was going to read it today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, read it. It's amazing. The feedback on it has been incredible. It is probably one of the most well-sourced pieces I have seen in a really long time. I mean, he really went above and beyond on this piece. There are 51 citations. It is really, really well done.
I can't wait to read it, especially since it's on a topic I've been looking for a lot of clarity on. That's Iran, right?
Yeah, and a lot of people are saying, like, oh my gosh, I've been looking for something like this, because it goes through in a really, for as long as it is, and it is a little lengthy, it goes through a really, like, concise history of how things got to the way they are right now and why, some of the more specific battles, like all kinds of strategy. And then it brings us through today. And, you know, one of the things I asked him when he was writing the piece, I said, is there any way you could put more focus on the Obama-Iran deal and why? Why did he do it? What was the motivation? And he said that if he were to do that, it's a whole subsection of pieces in and of itself, like the geopolitical reasons behind it and all that. So
it should be edition two. He should put out a second edition.
I am going to try to make him our resident foreign policy guy, because I really don't have a clue. I'm just being honest.
Wow, there's a lot here. Yeah, I'm looking at just the citations alone.
Yeah, it's really, really, really well done. Really well done.
Actually, this is not very long at all.
It is not long in length, but if you want to comprehend what's being said in there, you need to dedicate the time to really thinking through it. There's no fluff in this piece, literally none. It is
okay.
It is what I hope Uncover DC is always. It is really good.
You know, I just to branch off of this and just to address the social media summit last week one more time, this is what I had been saying, that whether, and I know it's a long shot that the president's not going to win re-election, but whether it was 2 years he had left in his administration or 6 years, the most important thing he could be doing is to anoint a new media.
Yep.
And to call attention to a new media, the one that is doing dirty work, that is going and digging and asking questions that are otherwise being very, very noticeably unacknowledged, and to do all this stuff without fluff. It's really great. Yeah. I think he's been doing it, actually.
I think that what he did with the social media summit was a really good idea, because he recognizes it. He recognizes what's happening. As a matter of fact, I'm not going to say who sent it to me because I haven't gotten permission, but somebody emailed me and said something ingenious, if that's right. Genius, whatever.
Yes, ingenious. Ingenious. Is fine.
Yeah. They said, media, inviting citizen journalists to the White House is dangerous. Media, Steele using a citizen journalist on CNN iReport to verify information that's used to obtain a FISA warrant to spy in a presidential campaign, no problem at all.
None.
Just perfect. I mean, you couldn't encapsulate it better. It's interesting, because to see, like, NBC last night, the tweet that they put out about this, about race baiting conspiracy theorists being, you know, brought to the White House, or people are just done with the nonsense. It's so flagrant and in your face at this point.
Absolutely is. And I was watching a little bit of Chris Hayes, who's the officially male Rachel Maddow. Mm. I was watching a little bit of him, and they talk with these. It's just I can't stand the language because they're so. I don't know. It's all an act. We know it's an act, but. These are people who, you know, when they tweet, all of a sudden you see it get retweeted by 50 different accounts. Well, that's how social media works, you idiots. You know, so they think it's suspicious when one person says something and all of a sudden it starts catching on and it's not being disseminated through television. And meanwhile, they're sitting there with their blush and their lipstick on, feeling like they've been left out in the rain at the birthday party. Well, you are out in the rain and it's your fault.
Not only are they out in the rain, but they're out in the rain on social media, too.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the reasons why Twitter's been looking into removing the like button, because they don't want people to see how poorly these tweets are gaining attention from the people that they wish to support.
Oh, they have no engagement. None.
The only engagement is people yelling at them about the tweets. Go ahead.
No, you brought up the NBC or MSNBC tweet about the race baiting.
Yep.
My attention was called to it when it came up because it had maybe like 100 or 200 retweets, a couple of hundred likes, but over 2,000 comments. I knew that they were getting slayed.
Let's explain a ratio because I've had a lot of folks ask me what it is. A ratio is basically when you tweet something out and the number of retweets or shares is very low compared to the number of comments, thereby indicating, you know, depending on what the way the tweet is worded, thereby indicating that the overall consensus is disapproval because more people are commenting on it than feel the need to share the tweet.
Yeah, and that's another reason why it would be an optics measure to get rid of the like button, because if you can get rid of likes, even though they would still see that the retweets are low, if you can get rid of likes, then at least there can be the illusion that we don't know how many likes there are, but based on all these comments, it's probably hopping.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And speaking of all of this stuff, we'll move quickly into Brandon. So walk away yesterday, Brandon was retweeted by President Trump. And then after the video series, I think it's called, I should know what it's called. My God, The Hard Truth, that I participated in. My video will be coming out soon on socialism. His video about the media was retweeted by President Trump, and then all of the reactions to that video that he tweeted were retweeted by President Trump. So there were like 20 retweets of people, everyday Wow. people, responding to President Trump's retweet of Brennan's video. And so I told everybody, I said, guys, keep your eyes out, because what they've been doing lately is stripping retweets in real time right in front of your eyes from tweets. So you'll see a tweet, it's got like 1,800 retweets, right? And then as you're watching, it'll drop down to 1,500 as you're watching it.
I've seen this happen with likes.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen. Yeah, I've seen this happen.
So it drops down on the conservative side of things. People have, you know, obtained screenshots of this occurring and video recording, you know, because on your iPhone, you can record your phone screen as inherent inside the operating system on iOS. So people have been recording this stuff and sharing it online. And then conversely, I should say, if you look at an AOC tweet, her tweet starts off with like 3,000 like or 3,000 retweets and like however many likes and jumps up like 4,000 or 5,000 or 10,000 or 15,000 right in front of your eyes. And so I said, outside of the sheer manipulation of all of this stuff, you're also seeing the fact that advertisers who advertise on Twitter should be really up in arms about this, because it's clear that they can easily manipulate analytics to at their whim, which means how do I as an advertiser using the platform as a brand to promote my widget or whatever it is, count on what they're telling me in terms of analytics and metrics to gauge what my return on investment is in terms of that money?
They shouldn't. And I'll tell you why. I've known this for a long time, and I'm sure many people have too. But going back 10 years now. I have a friend who still is, he's actually doing better than he ever has. He is a very, very high up there in the digital marketing world. He pretty much heads up digital marketing for a world leader company. And pretty much back in, I'd say 2007, 8, around there, I was being told, listen, whatever you do, this is when Facebook really started shitting the bed as far as affecting how people are able to reach. Oh, no, that happened around 2010 or so, where they started clamping down how you can reach the people you built up. But as far as buying ads and boosting posts and all that stuff, so maybe this was about 7 years ago or so, that they have these click farms, not only in the Midwest and Chicago area, whatever, but out in like Qatar and in the UAE and in the Middle East, wherever the hell it is. But they had these click farms going on, and this is a buddy of mine. He's a progressive guy too. Of course, the emphasis, things weren't bad back then.
Yeah.
Now I can't even talk to him about politics, but that was the warning back then. So what I would say to advertisers who have not caught on to how these social media companies are completely scamming you, especially with boosted posts and just ads that are going to be spread out throughout the videos on the platform, they have got to integrate directly with people who command a loyal audience. They have to integrate directly with people who command loyal audiences that are going to seek them out no matter how bad the suppression is, because to trust these platforms is a fool's errand.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And to add to your point that you just made about the click farms, they have that for YouTube views also. You can like go out there and hire, one of these farms to actually add views to your videos. They're technically correct views because they're, actually literally doing the action of clicking on the video.
Yeah.
But I just got to say, that just makes me even more kind of amazed at the growth of some of us out here, given all of the suppression tactics, everything they throw at us, and doing things completely organically to be able to do and have the reach that some people have out there is quite incredible. Quite incredible.
So. Nothing, no army, no standing army can stop an idea whose time has come.
Oh, Mr. Ron Paul with that quote. It's in my trailer video on YouTube. He had that quote in one of his most powerful speeches ever.
What is it, Victor Hugo?
I don't know. And here's the freaking landscaper. I don't understand. Sorry. I was frank for a second there.
I know.
I specifically asked, if you're going to come on a Monday, make it after X amount of hours in this window. Do you think that they listen? One of the things I've noticed down here, Frank, is that it's really, really, really hard to find a reliable contractor, handyman, landscaper, any service oriented business where you have to hire someone to do work. There are apparently so few of them that they can run roughshod across the entire industry down here and not do anything their customers want and still make a living while charging ridiculous prices.
Well, yeah.
Free market at work.
Yeah, if there's not a lot of people down there, then the worst of the worst have command of the market.
It's disgusting.
You should become a contractor. You should start a contracting business on the side.
If only this were the problem in media.
Well, I'm having a good time over here. I have my window wide open, and I haven't even had a bird show up yet. So this is great.
Well, I'm really looking forward to coming and visiting you next week.
Yeah, no, it's going to be awesome. You said what day next week around there?
Thursday.
That's great, because Thursday night you're going to be on?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Friday night I have a buddy of mine coming down from Albany on the way down to Florida. He's going to stop by.
Fine.
This is a guy. This guy, my buddy Ben, he is he pretty much got me started with understanding just how intricate memes are.
Ooh.
And where it all. So yeah, I started getting a foundation before 2016. And Tracy, everybody's got to remember the storm is coming. as far as the memes. This is the great meme war of 2020 has not yet begun. I mean,
listen, with some of the, like, so Carpe Donctum is a friend of mine, and he's just a genius when it comes to this stuff. And there are so many others too. I mean, they're so hard hitting and poignant, and it's so important in this. Stupid landscaper.
No,
you hear this?
You should just crawl into the closet with the microphone.
I swear. Anyway, so it is the great meme war, and just to kind of segue something really cool that's going on. You remember when I interviewed Papadopoulos, right?
Yes.
This was at the American Priority Conference down in D.C. And the same folks are doing another conference in Miami at Trump Doral in October, and have, you know, kind of brought me on board to be their kind of like boots on the ground correspondent. Mm. So all of like the on camera stuff, like the interviews and talking to the people in the crowd and like just covering their event in, you know, in full, as well as speaking at it. And they just announced that Sarah Sanders will be there, which is so exciting.
Very nice.
Yeah, they've got Robert Davey will be there. They've got Charlie Kirk, obviously. Brandon Carpe, I think, is going to be there as well. And there is an entire segment on memetics.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, it's great. They did it at the last one. It was so good. So
you ever see? You ever see the? It's a meme in itself. It's hilarious. The example of a left wing meme. You ever see that?
No.
So pretty much when you look at a meme, anybody who knows what they're doing, memetics and the meme itself is pretty much the. It's almost like homeopathy, where with a homeopathic remedy, you are distilling and taking away and diluting and stripping away an element to the point where it is down to almost like you are just putting the energetic essence of something inside of a tonic that can then match the energy of the match the energy of the condition you're trying to fight. So if you wanted to make a topical ointment or topical, let's say it's I don't know what the hell, to go and treat poison ivy, you would actually take a little bit of the oil from the leaf on the poison ivy, put it into a 5-gallon jug of water.
Ah.
You mix it up, and then you take one drop of that 5-gallon jug and put it into another 5-gallon jug. You mix that up a little bit. You take a drop of that. So you are really, once you finally put the tonic or whatever the hell it is on your skin, there's nothing in there that's going to make you start itching. But that's just pretty much what the whole concept behind the homeopathy is. With memes, it's exactly the same thing. You're taking a larger conversation, a joke, something that has been thrown into the face of somebody, an argument that's being made, whether it be propaganda, anything that has a really ironic twist to it that needs to be exposed for the ridiculousness that it is, and it is distilled into a single frame where you don't have anything leading you around the page to tell you what's going on. You just understand, okay, so this person, this is the clownish thing, this person is standing for this, yet they are advocating for this that is just the exact same thing with a different look on it. The meme is such an amazing distilled statement that could be made about any number of issues that are relevant to a society. And it's usually in a sardonic, really funny kind of a way. And it breaks apart all of the seriousness that these pearl-clutching idiots run around the country selling themselves for. It breaks down the seriousness of what this idiots like Kamala Harris and Pete but something and whatever, it breaks it all of it down, and it breaks it apart in front of them, and
they have ridiculousness of it.
Absolutely. And there's this one meme that's just come out that shows you a left-wing meme, and it is
a what? There is no such thing as a left-wing meme.
Exactly. It's you ever see the thumbs up, the anarcho-capitalist thumbs up guy? It's pretty much this circular figure with the black and yellow guy with the whatchamacallit, the sunglasses on, and it's a thumbs up. Well, pretty much they do the anarcho-communist type, and it's an entire page full of just words. Entire
so
page.
So it's not
full
a
of
meme
words.
Anymore.
It's not a meme. They try to explain the entirety of their stance from the top of the page to the bottom of the page. It's just word salad and victimhood and explaining what they're trying to convey in the picture, because they can't meme. They can't. They have no humor. They can't strip things away. It's hilarious. So I would love to be in on that little bit of a. I don't know what it is, college course.
You really should attempt to. That was really great, by the way, for people to hear. You should try to get down there, Frank.
I don't have a travel budget. I don't have anything like that. I can't leave. I can't leave New York.
Is it only because of the travel budget?
It's everything. Even if let's say money for a plane ticket showed up on my front step tomorrow, I still would not want to leave because I have work to do. I don't feel comfortable enough. I don't have That's just it.
Fine.
One day I will. I'll know when I feel comfortable.
Well, obviously. I mean, I'd hope so.
One day.
Let's talk quickly about, I almost don't even want to talk about this, but I want to bring up this Tim Pool. You know what? I'm not even going to do it. Let's talk about this Tim Pool clip where he talks about, now for all the people out there or the mainstream media who try to slander Tim Pool as some kind of an alt-right figure, I just want to tell you, you guys are out of your minds, completely out of your minds. He is definitely not a Trump fan, and he certainly is not right-wing. Now, maybe he's coming around a little bit to see the wiseness of the conservative philosophy. But I want to play this clip that he has put out there where he's talking to his fellow Democrats and progressives about how AOC can cost them the election.
What universe are we in? These people have lost it. And that's why, look, man, they can mock me all day and night. They can ridicule me. They can push me aside, marginalize me, my friends, and the space in politics that I am in. But I tell you this, my friends and family who grew up in support of the LGBT community, who defended progressive rights, who are now shrugging, saying, what is going on? We are the people you need to vote for you, and you are losing us, and you don't care. You mock, you belittle, you smear, and I'll tell you what happens. Brandon Straka, I think I'm pronouncing his name right, walk away happens. People just say enough and they walk away. I am not on board with the Democrats at this point, and I flat out said I'll probably be voting independent. Well, I might just vote for Tulsi no matter what. So I don't want to say necessarily that I'm leaving, right? But the Democrats have gone nuts, plain and simple. Look at the tweets they put out. It is a nightmare, an absolute nightmare.
And
here's what's going
to happen. There you go.
Let me say a few things because I like Tim's actually a friend of mine, and he's working in the tri-state area again, in the same area with Bill Altman from Mines, and I think he's going to be by the studio again sometime soon. And he's right. The only thing here is that there is no helping the Democrat Party at this point. Anybody looking at the Democrat Party thinking that they can right the ship it's almost like you're going to go up to a junkie, give them money and say, okay, now promise me you're only going to buy food with this ultimatum stuff, that's got to go. As far as Tim Pool goes, he is very, very good on privacy.
Yeah, and free
privacy
speech.
Rights. He's very good on free speech. I would really love to introduce federalism to him a little bit more, because when he talks about centrism, everybody needs to understand the Constitution is the center, and that is the charter for the federal government. What is right wing or left wing is allowed to define itself on the local state level. Okay, and Democrats. I've said it before. I'll say it many, many times. Democrats liberals, progressives, they need to start embracing that constitutional centrism so that they have a better time selling their ideas as experiments on the local level that a local population can get behind based on what they know they can generate to pay for it, based on what they know that they are comfortable with as a geographical society or a culture. People who know, people in Rhode Island know what can be handled by people in Rhode Island better than those in Wyoming know what they can do. So this is where right and left can define itself. And if we're going to be really a mixed bag, a 50-state experiment over here, then people like Tim Pool need to start redefining those lines of federalism and know the reasons why we have that separation. But other than that, he's totally right about the Democrat Party. But it's very foolish to think that if these people start actually feeling the heat of people like Tim Pool, who are properly articulating what the problem is, and if he thinks that in feeling that heat, they're actually going to change what is really living inside of them, it is a very foolish thing to make a deal with these types of people. The mask is already off. You need to find another place to bring your vote.
Well, the interesting thing is that we'll talk about this now because I wasn't going to, but you see what happened over the past couple of days with Pelosi and AOC and the squad. It's so stupid. Like the squad and how they're squabbling amongst one another publicly, and the Democrat caucus is sending out nasty tweets. And originally I was like, wow, this is crazy. This is never something we ever see in the Democrat Party, ever. They never infight like this in public. And then a good friend of mine started blowing the whistle or like sounding the alarm. And at first I didn't agree, but the more I thought about it, the more I said, you know what? She's right. This is the Pelosi attempt to separate the, quote, mainstream Democrats, the establishment Democrats, the running for office Democrats from the extremist left wing of the party in the eyes of people by creating a fake sort of divide between the two factions. And I didn't believe that this could be true, but my opinion is now that it may be that this is completely manufactured. And that the political candidates running for office after their, absolutely unbelievable debate performances, where they were so anti-American, so anti-United States or, what comes first for America, that they completely alienated 70 to 80% of their base. That now this is what the Democrats feel they need to do to be able to regain the center. Or even,
How can they regain that if everybody on the stage was trying to one up the crazy next to them? That's not a portion of the Democrat Party. That's everybody that's representing them right now.
It's the beginning after the polls came back, Frank. I'm going to tell you they are silly in thinking that the small minority that is amplified by the media and social media is the majority. That when they started getting, I can guarantee, I don't have factual information in front of me, but I'm telling you, when the polling came back from this Democrat debate, they probably crapped their pants and they probably put the message out. You guys, if you have any chance of even coming close to Trump in the general, you need to tone it down. You need to tone down the rhetoric, right? So they start to do that in the sphere of public influence by starting these things, by basically ostracizing the four people that are leading the social media charge on the left in terms of the message, etc. Right? What does Trump do? I think that he realizes this immediately, puts out his tweet about the four of them going back to where they came from or whoever he referenced. I didn't even completely read it in full. The media goes nuts with how he's a racist. And what does Pelosi do? What's the first thing she does? She comes out and she supports them and she props them up and she is allied with them once again, completely destroying the fake wall that was attempting to be built by Nancy Pelosi.
Well, that's interesting.
Isn't that an interesting way to look at it?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely, it is.
Because why else it was so inflammatory. It wasn't racist. It was just really hard hitting that tweet. Go back where you came from.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, they're not representing the United States.
No.
So I've said it before. It's if we were to get rid of it, which is one of my dreams, if we actually were able to get rid of the United Nations, kick it out of New York and extract and take ourselves out of the United Nations and just concentrate on our country as a sovereign entity. You still have to deal with our own Congress, which has pretty much become the United Nations.
Yeah.
Our own Congress is the United Nations. They are thinking about every other country out there and every other foreign interest there is in front of our own. So we are dealing with two UNs. We have the one that looks like a standing hard drive in New York City. and then we have our own Congress.
Let's talk about New York City real quick.
Okay.
Did you get affected by that blackout the other day?
No, it was just Manhattan.
Okay. And I see a lot of people now, like a lot of the information coming out, trying to downplay the scope of the coverage area that was affected. I had a friend that was there, like in the city when it was happening. And supposedly it was one transformer fire, but there were initial reports that there was one in one area and then further away there was another one. And then a few hours later, another one in a different location. And as I was getting these reports in, I'm thinking to myself, there is no way that this is not subterfuge of some kind.
Yeah.
I really...
No, it's not. I mean, it is, I should say.
Yeah, there's no, I mean, and I just happened to say, well, I mean, you know what's covered in this outage? I said this right away, not to be a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist, but the jail where Epstein's being held is right in the coverage area that was affected.
What about other buildings, offices, apartments?
Oh, yeah. Was
anything in the area that needed to be cleaned or needed
his
to be...
House.
I mean, there's a lot going on there. My buddy, I have a friend who entered into working for Con Edison right after high school. No college, just wants to go right to work. And he's been there for a long time now. I got in touch with him. I said, hey, man, listen, New York Post is still, as of late last night, still reporting that Con Edison has no idea what actually caused all this. Mm-hmm. And I said, is that true that you guys said you don't know what the hell caused it? He goes, yeah, unless somebody's keeping it a secret for some stupid reason, we don't know why it happened. He said, now, that being said, Con Edison is probably the best utility in the country. I mean, the reason why we don't have a lot of headlines about power outages over here in New York area is because every time we turn the light switch on, the lights go on. It's not like other parts of the country where you'll get a couple of outages a month.
Yeah.
So they really do a great job. We'll talk about what's going to happen to power costs over here once Indian Point shuts down. But
listen, I know because oh my goodness.
But still, you talk about the area. You talk about the tens of thousands, and you talk about how it's 5 hours, just enough time. If you needed to do some house cleaning, I think 5 hours would be just enough time. They had the lights up before midnight again.
Yeah, I was watching them come up on someone's Twitter. And you know what was great about it, just to give the plus sides? First of all, New York City is so resilient. I'll never forget after 9/11, I think it was a couple weeks. Maybe it wasn't a couple weeks, maybe it was a little longer. But I remember I was driving out of Manhattan over the Brooklyn Bridge when the blackout happened and the whole city was down. Do you remember that?
2003. That got us too.
Yeah, that was scary because we had just, it feels like it was so much closer to the actual event of 9/11, but it was really scary. And we were all just like, whoa, it was like over 24 hours. The whole city was down.
Yeah, it was almost two full days for us.
Yep.
And it was in the middle of, I think, July or August. It was August.
Yep.
It was very, very hot. And in 2003, it did feel like 9/11. It was only 2 years. I mean, I think of, I think of 2008 about how 2008, it seems like it was a mile away. And when I was in 2008, I still think about, wow, it's been 7 years since 9/11. Seven years is nothing.
It's almost 20 now.
Yeah, 2 years is nothing.
it's hard. It's weird to think about it that like my kids weren't alive. Like a lot of people weren't alive that are like older now. It's weird. As I approach my 39th birthday, I start to think about these things in a different way. Like we were looking at the movies the other day, like Austin Powers is almost 20 years old.
Mm.
It's crazy.
I mean, The Matrix.
Yeah.
The Matrix, what was that, 99?
Yep. Yep.
So it's 20 years old this year, I think. Hold on. Let me see here.
God, 20 years.
The Matrix.
20 years.
The Matrix, 1999. It is 20. The Matrix is 20 years old. Holy shit.
Isn't that weird?
Oh, my God.
Isn't that weird?
It is.
You sit and think about it and you're like, oh, boy. That's
hey, you
crazy.
Know, it's actually playing. Where is this? Sinopolis in Chelsea. Where is that? This is at 260 West 23rd Street. The Matrix is playing tonight at 7 p.m.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So
where was I going with this after I was going? Oh, yeah. So we went over that stuff. There was another place that I wanted to go with this whole talk.
The blackout? Epstein?
Oh, yeah. So his house was in there. There was the blackout in New York. What else was there? Okay. So there's another topic, and then we'll go on to some judicial system. Did you ever see the Dana Carvey comedy special where he does the OJ skit?
No.
If you haven't, I'll send you the link to it. It's really funny. And he imitates all the attorneys and their voices and stuff, and how it was really hard for them to say the word judicial in some of the hearings. say it fast. It's almost impossible.
Judicial, 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 judicial.
Well, you've got better diction than I do then. But judicial. So judicial watch.
Judicial.
The judicial system. Anybody who knows that skit knows what I'm talking about. You'll see it. But so there's an Antifa thing going on here. We could talk about this idiot who went and bombed or attempted to bomb the, and I haven't really studied up too much on the story, but attempted to bomb the ICE detention center.
Yep.
And what I find ridiculously disgusting is that there are tweets all over the place with people from this group, Black Bloc, Antifa, you know, whatever communist party of blah, 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 that we've spoken about before, who are tweeting out, rest in peace to our comrade and his mission was virtuous. And, you know, all this stuff about how it was a proper response to what's going on. And this stuff is still up on Twitter. I mean, what the hell? Can you imagine if somebody on the right, if there was some weird extremist attack, look at what happened at Christchurch, even though it wasn't a right-wing attack. And we weren't even allowed to talk about it, let alone to praise the guy who did it. Not that we'd ever do that because we have morals and integrity and, you know, some kind of a human compass. But these people are praising this guy and it's still there. There's no accounts being suspended. They're calling for more violence on their accounts.
I saw the praising coming from writers at Teen Vogue again.
Yes.
Which, of course, is I guess, staffed by sex magic witches. But here's the thing. We're going back now to a couple of conversations ago, Tracy, as far as the extremism in the Democrat Party.
Yep.
How do you actually separate all of that? How do you isolate all of that? When this is – if you actually take the ridiculousness – that is coming out of the mouths of people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib and the Omar chick and everybody else. When you actually take all of that rhetoric and all of the media coverage and people that are making these claims, these are concentration camps, these are human rights abuses, children are being killed, it's racism, it's concentration camps, and we are seeing a virtual genocide at the border. If you anybody who's actually facing those things, and it's real, if you think that the way that war is actually won is in a media spat, is in going on and tweeting and retweeting something and all of a sudden the genocide goes away.
Yeah.
It's nonsense. Of course, there's going to be people who run at a ICE detention facility with a firearms and incendiary devices, trying to burn things down and free people. How do you separate one from the other?
Speaking of which, I guess now is a good time, and I know this has been played by a lot of people, but I want to play this clip of Holman and AOC in this hearing the other day. What do you say?
Yeah, go ahead.
Provided.
She's just horrible. Like, ugh.
It says the official recommendation. There were three different options presented. The third included the option for family separation. This initiative would pursue prosecution of all amenable adults, including those presenting with a family unit. Mr. Holman, your name is on this. Is this correct?
Yes, I signed that memo.
So you are the author of the family separation policy?
I am not the author of this memo.
You're not the author, but you signed the memo.
Yes, a zero tolerance memo.
So you provided the official recommendation to Secretary Nielsen on families for the United States to pursue family separation.
I gave Secretary Nielsen numerous recommendations on how to secure the border and save lives.
But it says here that you gave her numerous options, but the recommendation was option three, family separation.
What I'm saying, this is not the only paper where we've given the Secretary numerous options to secure the border and save lives.
And so the recommendation, of the many that you recommended family separation.
I recommended zero tolerance.
Which includes family separation.
The same as is whenever a U.S. citizen parent gets arrested when they're with a child.
Uh-oh.
Zero tolerance was interpreted as the policy that separated children from their
parents. If I get arrested for DUI and I have a young child in a car, I'm going to be separated. When I was a police officer in New York and I arrested a father for domestic violence, I separated that
Mr. Holman, with all due respect.
With all due respect.
Legal asylees are not charged with any crime.
When you're in the country illegally, it's violation 8 United States Code 1325.
Seeking asylum is legal.
If you want to seek asylum, you go through the port of entry, do it the legal way. The Attorney General of the United States has made that clear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're a brain dead lollipop. You're brain dead.
No,
you're
a lollipop with hair. She's not a lollipop because lollipops actually taste good.
She's a brain-dead lollipop with hair.
She's a horribly flavored Jelly Belly jelly bean. Isn't it horrible?
No, it's awful. That she sit there and she knows she is playing a role. And she knows that she is leading people down a ridiculous path. And she continues to go. And she continues to muddy the waters and to blur the lines. He's telling her there, seeking asylum is not illegal. If you go to a port of entry, you actually know I have an asylum case, I'm fleeing a violent situation, whatever the hell it is, I got to get out of the country, and I'm going to present my case to an immigration official at a port of entry at the United States. You're going to go right there. But what she's saying is that for the hundreds of thousands of people who are pouring over the border and are first making a priority to evade immigration authorities.
Yep.
They are making it a priority to evade immigration authorities and these official ports of entry, that they are asylees. So just like it is, just like we have to now accept illegal immigration and immigration as one and the same, asylum seekers who actually do what they must do to present themselves as seeking asylum, and those who are trying to avoid the entire process altogether because they know that they're just trying to come here for some WIC payments, that is what's going on. That she's a horrible blight to humanity, to be honest. She's a blight.
And she doesn't even, I don't even know that she understands, like, what, I don't even know if she comprehends how she's being used. I really don't.
I think she does. I think that right now the money and the engagement on Twitter is too good to care. I think it right now it's too good to care. She's starting to find her way. She's starting to own her role a little bit more. She's getting a lot more sassy. And that's it. I mean, what does she have? Like close to 5 million followers on
4 point something million followers. Yeah.
Yeah. Almost 5 million followers on Twitter. How many people got her elected? She represents
177,000.
Yeah. She represents a district in New York City in which 100,000 people elected her. And now she is a national figure. It's back to taxation without representation again. To say that 535 people represent 330 million is a joke.
No, we talk about this all the time. We wouldn't have any room in the buildings. We'd have to make new buildings.
Or if we wanted to do we'd it have right. to, we'd have to digitize it.
Yeah, or we'd just have to get rid of all the people here illegally.
Well, that would probably knock us down to 10 to 30 million. But still, you're talking. We stopped apportioning Senate seats. Congressional seats in the House. We stopped expanding the House, I believe, in the 1920s.
Crazy.
So it doesn't even matter. I mean, just legal immigration. There is no. It's supposed to be one representative per 30,000 constituents.
Yeah.
So within the 100,000, 110,000 people who voted for this airhead, that should have been 3 seats in the House.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Got one more story, and we got to break it off a little early today. I have 5 interviews today, back to back to back to back. So I am really crazily running around. It's great. It's great. It's awesome. I love it. But Judicial Watch released 18 pages of documents revealing Victoria Nuland and Jonathan Weiner were coordinating with Steny Hoyer's national security advisor, Dan Silverberg, to work on the Russia dossier materials provided by Christopher Steele.
Hmm.
So I'm just going to read the article because it's really well done. This is in collaboration with the Daily Caller News Foundation. They released 16 pages of documents revealing former Assistant Secretary of State Nuland and Special Coordinator for Libya, Jonathan Weiner, coordinating with then House Minority Whip Steny Hoyer's National Security Advisor, Dan Silverberg, to work on Russia dossier materials provided by Christopher Steele. In an email exchange, Glenn Simpson of Fusion GPS asks Weiner if he's, quote, in town, and Weiner responds, quote, for a couple of hours. And then Weiner emails Nuland asking for 15 minutes of your time today, if possible, to discuss a Russia-related issue from his old Orbis friend. Orbis was co-founded and run by Russia dossier author Christopher Steele. Nuland's assistant suggests a secure call for the discussion, and Weiner asks his aide to postpone a meeting he was to have with the State Department Bureau of Intelligence and Research to accommodate.
Mm.
Then, in an exchange beginning in November 2016, Hoyer top aide Silverberg emails a thank you to Nuland, calling her a, quote, warrior on these issues, and stating that he looks forward to pursuing, quote, some of the things we discussed yesterday, albeit on the system integrity side. Nuland forwards it to Weiner, who adds he wants to talk about, quote, some new info. And then they say, oh, yeah, that sounds great. I have, you know, great Jonathan. I'm all ears. Call me back to talk further at your convenience. I can do it over the weekend. Basically, the rest of the article just talks about other information that they found. Basically that my mom told me I say basically too much, and now it's in my head. And I just said it like 40 times in the past minute. Anyway, what it does is it explains some of the emails they found that indicate the corroboration between Weiner and the rest of the bunch on the Steele dossier. And I find it interesting that it's the Libya rep or envoy or whatever you want to call him. Because if you think about Blumenthal and you think about Clinton and you think about what they did in Libya and the information that Blumenthal was feeding into the State Department unsecured through emails that were not being picked up by FOIA or monitored by the State Department, you start to see that maybe in this little tryst, Weiner started working more closely with some of those nefarious characters in the Clinton sphere.
Mm. No, I got it.
One more thing before we go. I read this morning the 14-page response memo to Jeffrey Epstein's request for bail and home detention, where Epstein says he'd like to hire private security paid for by him, wear an ankle bracelet, forfeit the property that he's living in New York City as bond, and be let out of prison. And the government responds, and there's a lot of really good information in there, including the fact that him offering up that property when it's in the indictment to be seized, should he be convicted, is useless.
Guy wants to get out fed.
Yeah, he really does. And there's a hearing today to talk about all that, by the way. See if he's going to get bail. I really don't see the judge granting him bail. I just don't.
What would he do? What would be the first thing he did if he got out?
Got rid of all the evidence in his house that's hiding in safes behind walls and everything else?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure, I don't know if they've blocked that off as a crime scene or if people can still freely enter and exit. But did you see they released on YouTube the video of his house that was taken when he was arrested in Palm Beach?
No.
They released that video, was online on YouTube, the walkthrough of the house.
Oh, is that the one with the head like the dentist chair in it?
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, people look into that, but I think maybe he just liked dentist visits and cleanings in his home. That could be. He's a billionaire.
Got the money, yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that was really interesting over the weekend, we talked about in our little chat a little bit, was the release of the drone footage from Epstein Island. Paul Joseph Watson released a video on Summit, or an article with the video link inside of it, of the drone footage of Epstein Island. And if you looked in the description box, first of all, the weird stuff that was on that drone footage, I don't even know what to say. But if you look in the description box of that video, there's a link to a Google Drive drop where there's all kinds of like 4K photos, close-ups, all kinds of information in there from the island. Stuff we've never been able to see up close before.
Especially the inside of the temple.
Yeah, through the window.
Like look through the window.
And the fact that there is that like castle-style bar on the outside of that door. Did you catch that?
The door looks like it's painted on, though. It doesn't look like a real door.
Oh, it did to me. I'm going to have to look more closely at it.
I mean, it looked like it was, you know, it was going to open up with big wooden doors. And then I said, whoa, wait, is this just a flat wall? It's painted up, doors That's painted
interesting.
On?
That's interesting. I'm going to have to take a closer look. But hey, this was a good one, Frank.
No, it was. We're just kicking off the week.
Yeah. We've got more coming Wednesday and Friday for you. And I guess that's it. You guys have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Other Side of Monday Morning Val.
Now that you've had your coffee.
No, I don't.
You don't?
I don't have my coffee.
Oh. That's my fault.
To be honest, it's not like a my coffee thing. I don't have, some mornings I don't have coffee at all.
Oh.
Today's one of those mornings that just didn't happen.
I'm sorry, it's my fault.
Nah.
And you guys can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com. Thanks for tuning in.
Later.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.